You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast with host Fifi Peters.
Well, the more things change, the more they stay the same. These are the sentiments of anti-corruption NGO Corruption Watch, which released their latest report today. The report does indicate that we had almost 2,000 whistleblowers reporting acts of corruption in the first 6 months of the year, this taking place both in the private and the public sector. We do have Kavisha Pillay, the head of stakeholder relations and campaigns of Corruption Watch, to take us through the report. Kavisha, thanks so much for your time. Just tell us exactly what the main acts of corruption were that took place over the past year.
Thanks, Fifi, and good evening to the listeners. So this report, the Analysis of Corruption Trends report, looks at the whistleblower complaints that we received in the first 6 months of the year. And what we're what's emerging, as you sort of said in your intro, is that things are just, you know, staying the same. So we're seeing patterns of police corruption, higher number of reports coming through on that issue, similar to what we've seen in previous years. You know, sort of corruption in relation to the managing of the COVID-19 pandemic, particularly issues relating to the temporary employment relief scheme, as well as procurement corruption in the health and education sectors, and corruption in the distribution of food parcels. And then thereafter, you're seeing corruption in public schools, which is, at, I think, 6% of the reports, and public housing. The majority of the reports are coming in from the Gauteng province at 42%. That's followed by KZN at 10% and the Western Cape at 9%. All of these reflect similar trends that we've been seeing over the years. And then the most common types of corruption that people have been reporting is maladministration and procurement corruption, both at 16% respectively, then followed by the abuse of power or authority, which is at 15%.
Mm. And as a business show, we'd be interested in how much of this was private sector corruption?
So 31% of the complaints that we received was located in the private sector. The report does break down the number of complaints that we have located within all three tiers of government, as well as the private sector. So when you break them down from the private sector, national government, provincial government, and local government, the private sector leads at 31%. But when you accumulate the reports in all three tiers of government, that amounts to about 52%. But it's still, you know, I think since the start of the pandemic, we are starting to see an influx of reports coming through about private sector corruption. And again, related to issues around the TERS, around grants and relief, but also about procurement and supply chain issues.
Can you flesh out the complaints around the grants and the TERS system?
So with the TERS and with the grants, you find that there's a lot of fraud issues that happen. So, you know, employers were not paying, you know, the sort of UIF and so on, were not paying the TERS grants to their employees.
Hmm.
And then what employers would also do is that they would overinflate the number of employees that they were actually claiming on behalf of. So if a company only had 5 employees, they were then claiming for about 15 to 20. So they were creating ghost workers. Similar with the sort of relief grants, you found that companies who weren't, they were shell companies that were claiming for these relief grants. They didn't actually work, they weren't active, but they were doing that. So if I owned quite a few companies, I was claiming for my active company as well as the others. And, you know, just finding ways to defraud the system. And, you know, it's really concerning because that money, it wasn't a lot of money that companies and employees were receiving, but we saw that so many people weren't able to access, you know, those basic grants because others were just, you know, claiming much more than what they actually needed.
Hmm. And, I mean, was the report able to cite in which sectors this was happening the most in, or perhaps even which companies this was taking place at?
Unfortunately, our data haven't been able to do that type of in-depth analysis to pick up which were the sort of companies that we were most concerned about. But we are actively looking into this TERS issue because since the start of the, you know, since the rollout of the grant, we've had over 200 of these complaints that have come through. A lot of these complaints have been referred to the necessary law enforcement institutions such as the Fusion Centre and others who are looking at this particular problem. But we haven't been able to do that type of in-depth analysis to pick up the most problematic companies or even the sort of key sectors where that was occurring.
Mm.
But it is something that we are looking into.
Mm. But I see that you're worried about the safety of whistleblowers. It looks like it's becoming a lot harder to do the right thing. What are you seeing, or what reports are you receiving in this regard?
Look, you know, from the time of our inception, which was in, you know, 9 years ago in 2012, whistleblowers would always say to us that they continue to face harassment and intimidation because of their disclosures. And nothing has actually changed. I think there's a lot of conversations going on right now nationally following the death of Babita Deokaran, the Gauteng Health Department whistleblower. And, you know, that sort of catapulted this into a sort of major issue that, you know, people are talking about. But this is an experience that we've been aware of, you know, for a number of years. And, you know, even whistleblowers that were going to the Zondo Commission were talking about, you know, them losing their livelihoods, fearing for their lives. So, you know, we are in this environment where we need whistleblowers if we want to make a real effort in rooting out corruption in our society, but we also have to be completely aware of the risks that they face, you know, both the financial risks, the threats to their lives, the threats and intimidation to their family members. And, you know, it's just a really concerning environment that we're operating right now. So, you know, the message is, you know, one of we encourage whistleblowing, but we are also very aware of the problems that are faced by whistleblowers, and that it's requiring all of us in all sectors of society to try and do more to, you know, change the necessary laws and legislation that would make it more conducive for whistleblowing, but also to change the culture around whistleblowing. I think there's still, you know, this negative perception associated around blowing the whistle on issues of corruption or misconduct, mm-hmm. or any type of crime. So I think there's a lot that needs to be done right now so that our sort of country can, you know, move forward in this pathway. We can deal with corruption, that we know that our whistleblowers would be safe and protected, and that we can, you know, finally sort of attain, I'm not sure if this is a pipe dream, but a corrupt-free society.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if it's a pipe dream, but it's certainly an ideal one. Just last question. It's very interesting that a corruption watch essentially means or thinks that nothing has changed, because what we did see in the past year is quite a lot of intervention at state level to try and nip corruption in the bud. We had, you know, our hawks and the national prosecuting regulator, they were capacitated. We saw government ministers losing or being asked to step aside who were seen to have been alleged to have, you know, been involved in corruption. We saw even a former president, you know, being jailed, not necessarily for corruption, obviously for sidestepping the law, but for some, that showed that no one is above the law. So are you essentially saying that those signals and the actions that we have seen at national government level have not been effective in addressing the culture of corruption in South Africa?
Look, I mean, I don't want to dismiss that, Fifi, because everything that you raise is important and is a step in the right direction in terms of dealing with the problem, but it's not enough. And why I'm saying that is just sort of based on the data that we received. So if you're looking at, you know, last year's report, it was the similar amount, you know, we received close to 2,000 reports again about these same issues. So maybe at a national level around some of the big cases, you're starting to see, you know, some shift and some sort of change, but at a local level on the ground, you know, you find people are still experiencing corruption at an unabated level. And it is, you know, like I said, I don't want to dismiss the good things that have happened, but, you know, there was a perception survey that was released by Afrobarometer last week that said that, you know, people have become so despondent, and there's an understanding, or there's a perception that corruption is actually much worse now under this administration than it was in previous administrations. You can attribute a lot to that. Maybe it's because we are a lot more aware about it. There's a lot more exposés, which then drives that type of perception. But I think people continue to experience corruption at very high levels on the ground. And, you know, even at a sort of national level, you know, yesterday there was this big story that was released by Maverick Citizen, which is part of the Daily Maverick, around, you know, the police abuse of funds, where there was this one company who got like $500 million just for hand sanitizer and disinfectant, and they had charged the staff, you know, R5,000 for one 25-liter unit, whereas that goes for about R780. And there's just this rampant, unapologetic misuse of public funds. And nobody is stopping this. You know, $500 million is a lot of money for disinfectants. They spent R800 million on masks. They procured 43 million masks enough to sort of, you know, give it to 72% of the population. And you have to ask why and how does this happen? So we do acknowledge, you know, the sort of what the SIU and the NPA and others do, and they have a very tough job. And we do acknowledge, you know, some of the positive stuff that's been happening, ministers finally facing accountability. But it's not happening at a rate that will actually start to shift perceptions as well as experiences of what's actually happening on the ground.
Point taken, Kavisha. Thanks so much. We'll have to leave it there. I suppose given the fact that the culture has been allowed to run rampant for so long in our society, it's certainly going to take a whole lot more work to ensure that people actually take seriously the air of accountability that is being or trying to be introduced by this new administration. But we'll leave it there. Kavisha Pillay, the head of stakeholder relations and campaigns for Corruption Watch.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app, and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.